This is WGN Radio, and you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for dialing us in. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. I'm John Williams. Tom Gimbel's our first guest. Welcome back, Tom.
Good to be with you, John Williams. How are you?
Good. You are the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. Let's talk a little bit about the shockingly disappointing August jobs report. Are those your words or everybody's words?
No, those aren't my words. I think if we're adding jobs to the economy, we should be thankful and happy. And I believe that, you know, we're simultaneously building an economy while fighting a global pandemic. And I think expectations need to be tempered a little bit.
But 235 versus maybe 700,000 was anticipated, right?
Well, just because an economist says so doesn't make it right. I believe that we added 235,000 jobs. You know, where were we at a year ago at this time? Where were we at 14 months ago in April and May of last year? You know, it's to quote Ted Lasso, I think a lot of Americans are like goldfish. Their memory lasts 10 seconds. And I think we have to have some perspective.
Are we quoting Ted Lasso now on the Wintrust Business Lunch?
That's what we have to do to get the point across, John. That's what we got to do.
You know, I have an economist joke for you. Did you know that if you took all the economists in the world and lined them up end to end, they would still be pointing in the wrong direction? I don't know if that's funny or not, but somebody once told me that, and I don't have many economist jokes. By the way, that Ted Lasso show, you may know we've done a segment on the Wintrust Business Lunch about smart business lessons to be learned from him.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing you're telling us is to temper our expectations. Any job added is better than no jobs added.
There's no doubt about it. We have to look at this and say, it's like people getting all up in arms because the stock market the past 2 weeks has been negative. We're looking at a great year, a great bounce back. Company profits are still strong. And if there's one thing history's taught us is that nothing lasts forever, the good times or the bad, and we have to be patient. And we have to realize that we are adding jobs every single month. It's a great time. We haven't heard of companies doing a mass round of layoffs in forever. And we've really just got to focus on getting the supply chain fixed on a national and global level and getting the violence solved in Chicago. We do those two things, and we're going to be going for a long time.
I wonder what number is more important, the jobs that are available or the people not seeking them. When are the workers going to come back to some of these jobs, Tom?
Well, society's changed a lot, John. You know, even over 10 or 20 years, we've, and I'm not saying necessarily always for the worse, but the evictions don't happen the way they used to. And I'm not even saying with the moratorium on it, but just the evictions don't happen at the same rate that they used to. And people will live with their parents. And we've also got a ton of wealth that was acquired in the 80s and the 90s. That's generational money that's supporting people. And then we've got people in lower income areas, quite frankly, that I think society is forgetting about to a large extent. And I don't mean handouts. I mean training, development, and trying to help folks. And that's where you're seeing the violence, is that if you can't get out of your own situation and you're not worried about any repercussions, you're more willing to do things that are risky. You lose any risk aversion. And so I just think that the jobs are there and you're going to find people as the tide turns a little bit from what we had with Trump to the progressives and getting back to a more centrist society, hopefully next year, you're going to see a lot more people taking jobs. It might not be the same jobs. They might not be in the same cities.
Yeah.
But you're going to see employment in Florida and Arizona and Nashville and Texas really increase a lot.
Well, I think a lot of us thought September, the supplement ends, kids go back to school. So come September, these signs that say help wanted everywhere would be coming down. That's not happening. Maybe we just need to allow more time for that. Huh?
Yeah, I think a little more time, John. I think you also have to realize is that with COVID still being there and kids being back in school, which I believe is crucial, but all of a sudden, a kid comes down, and now with kids getting the Delta variant or COVID, a kid tests positive for COVID, they have to quarantine for 2 weeks again at their home. Well, the parent then needs to be home.
Yep.
And if you're not, right? So we still have that issue. So we don't have as many people, especially women, re-entering the workforce right now because they're worried about having to be home with the kids if something happens with the school system. So once we get past, I think that people are ready to put COVID in the rearview mirror. They're going out. They're going to ball games. They're getting on airplanes. For from that perspective, I think COVID in air quotes has been forgotten. However, in the reality of leaving home and going to work every day, if you have children, that hasn't been eliminated yet. And we're going to have to wait until, you know, mid next year for that, I'm afraid.
And that's a couple of lines in the president's multi-trillion dollar proposal for infrastructure and human infrastructure. Let's do more to help parents with child daycare, with child care.
No, that's not what we're talking about, though, Joe. And I like daycare for everybody, but this is about what we're talking about here is COVID-related help, not daycare when you're planning a family. And I think there's two different societal issues there. One is a global pandemic. The other is, can you afford to have children? Can you afford to plan for it? How are you allocating your money? And the school system to educate people, it's a really sharp utensil to be dealing with that haphazardly, John.
Tom Gimbel's the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. Tom, we'll take that one up another day. Thanks for your time this one.
I look forward to it. Stay healthy and go Bears.
Philip Weiss is the president of SciFarth at Work. SciFarthAtWork.com is the website. I'll even spell it for you in a minute. Let's spell out a little bit about what it's like in the workplace with the temperature. Hey, Philip, you're on the air. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me, John.
Pete shared with me your headline, and it said the heat's up at some places. And I said, oh, yeah, everybody's angry. But you're talking about the temperature, aren't you?
That's exactly right. Though you're right. The word heat is a loaded term these days. What's really fascinating in terms of the changing laws that are affecting businesses is how climate change and heat in actual work areas are creating kind of a perfect storm. Late last month, the Biden administration announced that they're going to make indoor workplaces a new priority focus in terms of how cool employers are keeping the environment. And it's a product of the fact that they're seeing more exhaustion, more collapse, and more injuries from indoor-related heat exposure.
Give me an example of a workplace where it's too warm.
Yeah, the ones that the government's already identified, and probably they're acknowledging that we should have looked at these environments a little bit earlier, include commercial kitchens, bakeries, canneries, warehouses that are not properly cooled. And by extension, we're talking about the kind of environments where you might think it's cool, let's say a person making deliveries, but the van opens and closes all the time, or a place where the company is just not careful enough to maintain its air conditioning, and therefore the employees suffer heat consequences. So really, this is a probably much expanded category, and employers have got to think about what it's like on a particularly hot day, both inside and out.
Okay, I'm just going to say this. Boy, you can tell Democrats are in office now, eh? I mean, really? So if it's too warm in my workplace, the federal government's going to tell them to fix the temperature for me? Shouldn't that be done between employer and employee?
Well, that's a great question. And the reality is we don't expect this set of rules to affect a typical office setting because the cooling in there is pretty consistent. And frankly, to your example, John, quite often employees make very clear if they're a little cold or a little warm, take that to HR, and that can affect the way the temperature is set. The real focus is on those environments where the government is actually seeing an impact. So Oregon, for example, that had a heat wave in mid-June, saw a whole spate of injuries in restaurants alone because the employers were allegedly not giving enough breaks to their employees, not enough cool water, which is odd considering it's a restaurant, and enough insisting on people take it easy. And one really interesting element of this whole heat wave in terms of legislation is with companies hiring so many people back, a lot of these employees just need time to acclimate, to get used to a warmer interior environment. So you're right, it might not just be the temperature, it might be the acclimatization to the environment.
Would you agree, too, that in a lot of the office buildings where a lot of us work, it's too cold? It's the opposite.
Yeah, and while we don't see a whole lot of physical manifestations, other than people, you know, describing the discomfort, it's remarkable how the conversation in corporate America has turned to, I got to wear four sweaters, to I actually feel too uncomfortable to work because of the heat. And in some cases, obviously, it's a pretty much a no-brainer. We had a client that came to us because they were a moving company, and they weren't asking enough of their homeowners to turn on the AC. So their own crews were suffering exhaustion just because they were moving furniture. That seems like an obvious call by an employer to keep sufficient temperature controls, but in some cases, they just don't think about it.
I also see it crossing a gender line, back to how cool it is in some places, in the offices. The women are all wearing sweaters, and it seems like the men set the thermostats or control the mechanicals, and the guys don't seem to be as bothered by the cool as the ladies. I'm sure you've run into this scenario before, right, Philip?
So we've heard that sometimes these requests cut along all kinds of lines, which is really interesting that you raise this. And your larger point, John, that the decision makers are not thinking about every group in the workplace, I mean, that is a kind of a key moment of reckoning for so many corporate leaders and compliance leaders to say, well, we're making all kinds of decisions, temperature, design, assignments, team activities, are we actually asking our current employee base, what do they want, or are we just grandfathering in some practice? So your illustration is one of many that serves to make that point.
I don't know if they can do it. Sometimes the thermostat's controlled by a guy in Atlanta. Literally, I was in a building and it was several states away. But if you said to everybody, what temperature do you want the office at? And give them 68 to 75, I don't know what the range would be. It'd be interesting to see what people would say. I don't know the outcome of that, but it might surprise some folks.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the numbers you just threw out, those numbers actually tie to what the federal agencies have talked about. Somewhere in the 60s to 70s is where you're going to get most people, irrespective of how they feel or where they're from, to be comfortable. It's when you hit 80, at least in terms of the ambient temperature, that other issues become critical. Jobs, equipment, exertion, et cetera. So your range is the range the federal government talks about all the time.
Philip Weiss is the president of SeyFarth at Work, SeyFarthatWork.com. Philip, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me, John.
On the phone line is Dave Harvey. Dave is the vice president of Southwest Business. This is the team that manages travel, business travel, the executive ambassador program in Chicago. You can visit Southwest.com. Dave, thanks for joining us on WGN. How are you?
Doing great, John. It's great to visit with you again.
Yeah, I think we talked during the earlier stages of the pandemic. What is business like these days, both for business travel and Southwest overall?
Yeah, it was right around Valentine's Day this year, right when we were starting up O'Hare service. And I think at that time, we were just really cautiously optimistic in general about travel and specifically business. But I think we're ready to rip the term cautiously off of it. And we're optimistic. We're ready for 2022.
2022. Okay, this is October 2021. It sounds like we're a long ways away, but it's only 4 months away. You think that business gets more robust for the business side after the first of the year?
Absolutely. And I think it is worth just a quick walk down where we've been this year in 2021. And we've seen some nice momentum. So, you know, first quarter was still the dark days. Jan, Feb, we were down more than 90% versus 2019, same period. We finally started seeing those green shoots in March as the vaccine started rolling out. And really what we saw is a 5% month-over-month sequential increase from March all the way to July. So really some momentum. We were kind of getting back to just down 60% this summer. This is the business segment I'm talking about. And then, of course, the fourth wave kind of reared its ugly head and things kind of flatlined. But we are encouraged. We've seen some nice momentum here coming off Labor Day, which is too expected. Fall's a good business travel period. Not the business travel renaissance we had all hoped for, but we'll take it. So we're heading in the right direction going into the new year.
What's the opposite of business, recreational or other kind of travel? Does that go first? I mean, that will recover more quickly than the business side?
And it really already has. So leisure, you know, kind of break it up, leisure and business. As people were getting their shots, you know, early this year, spring, you know, they were making up for lost time. Beaches and mountains were open. So they're not only planning one trip, it was three or four trips. And I think the demand on the leisure side came back faster than any of the airlines could have ever in a million years predicted. So it made for some crazy times in the spring and the summer. Actually, this summer, leisure demand was basically already back to 2019 levels. So the missing gap is this business segment that we've got to support and bolster. We've got to be patient. You know, people's their workplace patterns have changed, and you know, you got more people remote and commuting. So it'll take a little bit more time to work out the kinks as offices are now reopening.
Well, I guess that begins to answer the next question. I mean, how is it that leisure returns robustly, but business lags? I mean, you'd think that business would really want to get back into the offices or into the cities where they do business. I wonder why they weren't as ready to travel as the people going on vacation.
Yeah, there's various things there, John. You've got a lot of the leaders were thinking first, how do we get our offices back open in a safe way? You know, between the vaccines, testing, health declarations, to be candid, you know, thinking through liability. I'm asking my people to come back to the office or travel for work. They contract COVID.
Yeah.
You know, what does that mean? So it's just a lot to unpack. And then by extension, the travel program kind of followed suit. So, you know, I actually think a lot of campuses were going to reopen literally the day after Labor Day here. We're talking to the travel buyers, they were kind of penciling in that date. And then late July, August is where the fourth wave. So they just said, we're going to take a little bit more wait and see approach.
But we just can't get out of our own way, can we? You know, we'd paid our dues. We were going to beat COVID-19. Here comes Delta. We got lax, and now we're starting, not from square one, though, right? I mean, you are ahead of the game relative to as bad as it was last time.
Yeah, we definitely are. If you look at wave two, wave three, and when the COVID numbers spike and hospitalizations, you basically see a correlation to our cancellation and then a softening of demand in the booking curve. And the good news here is for this fourth wave, or this most recent, it wasn't nearly as pronounced, so the cancellations didn't spike as much and the dampening of demand didn't drop to the same levels, and it also was truncated, so it didn't last as long. So I think people are getting more familiar. They're out there on the leisure side, and they're living life, and they know what it looks like to live life safely. So we've got that going for us. I do think this last big push to get everybody vaccinated will really help for the holiday season here.
Yeah, I hope so. What do you say about the vaccination rates among Southwest employees, and how are they adhering to that? What's the latest on that?
Well, a lot of movements. So about a month ago, the administration through OSHA kind of came out for all employers over 100 employees. They were going to have to mandate vaccines, but there was a kind of testing regimen that you could follow as well. And this is hot off the press just in the last week, for being a government contractor, the mandate is even tighter, i.e. there are some religious, medical, and disability exceptions, but everyone at Southwest Airlines, as well as all the other major carriers that are federal contractors, are going to have to be fully vaccinated by December 8th. And when I say fully vaccinated, that means you got to have 2 weeks lead time for everyone to be fully vaccinated. We literally, John, just announced that to our 60,000 employees yesterday. So we're unpacking that, working through that. We know it's a very personal decision, but the government is our single largest buyer. So it's important to do this. So we're moving down that path.
Of the 60,000, how many of them are already fully vaccinated?
We're not reporting those numbers. We're working through that. Everyone is uploading vaccine cards, you know, right now as we speak. We've had more incentive programs to date. Nothing on the mandate front. So we have some high level data, but we'll be reporting out on that here in the coming weeks.
I know that one of the other major carriers had just a few hundred employees that had still been unvaccinated and perhaps were going to forego their jobs. I guess at some point it'll come to that for the employees that don't want to get vaccinated. The testing will not be an option for them. Is that right?
Yes, and it's a big decision. It's a weighty decision that folks are going to have to sort through here soon. You know, there's basically three paths. You get vaccinated. You apply for one of the exceptions that will go through a process to understand that and make a determination there. Or, unfortunately, we hope nobody makes this choice, but it will mean a loss of employment here on December 8th.
I don't want anybody to lose their job, but as a person who's traveling later today, I like this policy. I think most passengers like this policy, too. I'll bet you've got some internal research that supports that.
There definitely is customer data that shows that customers in general are getting more comfortable with flying even before the mandates.
Yeah.
But you can see in the response that it's that next level of comfort if you know that all of the frontline employees that you're interacting with are vaccinated. It just there's a peace of mind element to it.
Couldn't agree with you more. And boy, we sure are cheering you guys on. Continued success. And if we can do something down the road, Dave, you let us know.
I would love to do that. ORD, so O'Hare is on fire. When we talked, John, we only had 16 flights to 5 markets. It is ahead of schedule. We're already up to 28 daily flights to 12 markets, including Cancun, Florida, Phoenix, Denver. So we've been so pleased in just the 8 months since you and I talked last.
And if you just joined us, when he said O'Hare is on fire, that's a rhetorical statement, just in case you joined us.
Thank you for that clarification.
Well done, Dave. Nice to talk to you.
Good talking to you, John. Be well.
Dave Harvey is the Vice President of Southwest Business. It's 12:45. The business news continues on WGN. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. McDonald's is going completely green. The company set a goal of net zero greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2050. In announcing the move, the company says it's partnering with the nonprofit group Science-Based Targets Initiative to help revamp its climate change focus. McDonald's president and CEO says the goal is to help every community they serve lessen the impacts of climate change and adapt for the future. Chicago's tech industry will benefit from federal grants to finance startup accelerator programs. Cranes reports the funding is earmarked for two local organizations working to support and grow Chicago tech: Matter, an incubator for healthcare startups, and Discovery Partners Institute at the University of Illinois, which helps commercialize faculty research, will split roughly $3 million. The U.S. Economic Development Administration awarded more than $36 million in grants to nonprofits, colleges and universities, state government agencies, and various organizations involved in technology entrepreneurship. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's your business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, October's a huge month in the business of food, and let's continue our commemoration of National Pork Month by talking about the McRib sandwich. McDonald's said it's bringing it back, the cult favorite, November 1st. There's been a lot of misinformation out there about just what is in the McRib, so let's unpack just what it's made of. A 2014 video from MythBusters included a description from a McDonald's official of what kind of meat is used in the McRib.
We have a boneless pork picnic, okay, which is the main ingredient in the McDonald's McRib patty. This is what we purchase and bring in the facility to create the McRib.
That's the voice of Kevin Nanke, the president of a food company in Oklahoma that provides McDonald's with its McRib patties. The pork picnic he spoke of is a cut of meat that comes from the front shoulder of the pig, right below the pork butt, which is nowhere near the rear end of the animal. Anyway, the video goes on to explain what's all added to the boneless pork picnic.
The only thing in a McRib patty is pork, water, salt, dextrose, which is a type of sugar, and preservatives, which are BHA, propylgalate, and citric acid.
Then they mix it all up.
So after this is mixed, we're going to form it into that McRib shape. You turn around behind you, you will see where we're forming McRib in the iconic form that resembles a rack of ribs.
Then it's flash frozen, and once it gets to the restaurant, it's bathed in barbecue sauce, and there you go. You have the rest of the month to get ready. November 1st is the big day. Within a couple of hundred miles of Chicago, a lot of combines have been parked because of rain, but the harvest of soybeans and corn are both ahead of the five-year average. Nationwide, corn's about 29% done, and 34% of beans are in the bin. Chicago Board of Trade right now, beans are 16 cents higher, wheat is down about 10, and corn is off about a penny. From the farm to your belly, today's National Eat Fruit at Work Day. It's also another way to enjoy apples. It's National Apple Betty Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Tammy Guth now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's talk a little bit about what happened with Facebook, Amy.
My goodness, I think there's going to be a lot of fallout for a while about everything that happened yesterday. So as I'm sure everybody is aware, Facebook, therefore also Instagram and WhatsApp, they were down for more than 6 hours for most people. But there was, what Facebook has said is they've called this a faulty configuration change. They've said there's no reason to suspect that there's any data that's been compromised or anything like this. But I think there were some interesting ripple effects. One of them was that at WhatsApp, so many things are so very automated and so dependent on this cloud that no internal services for the company headquarters worked except for email and calendars, including workers couldn't even get into conference rooms because they are digitally locked and unlocked through an internet connected tablet. So it was just so interesting. You know, so many businesses rely, especially small businesses, rely on social media to sell their products, to communicate with their customers for customer service, things like that. So it really had such a far reaching effect that, you know, and this comes, of course, right as we have this Facebook whistleblower who just recently spoke to Congress, calling the social network, saying it was accountable to nobody and really, you know, lobbying some pretty serious accusations at the company. So I think this is going to be a thing to watch for quite a while.
Kind of embarrassing too, right? If you're a tech company and you can't get into the conference room.
Right. Right.
It's sort
I know.
Of like your technology's working against you now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. A friend of mine has smart locks on her door, and she had an issue with her. She broke her phone and had a little bit of trouble accessing the lock. You know, there is an analog way to do that with a regular key, the old fashioned way. But even that, she said, you know, I'm so reliant on everything being electronic that I hadn't even thought of kind of my backup plan. So it kind of took an extra step for her. So I think it's things like that, which is on such a bigger scale.
Amy, my producer Aleph said to me yesterday, should we talk about this? And I said, oh, these things happen all the time. It's no big deal. This one seemed to be different or bigger than other ones, though.
Yeah, that's exactly right, especially the length of time. And I think it also points to just how big Facebook is and the reach that they have.
Yeah.
Earlier, when they first acquired Instagram and WhatsApp, there was a little bit of talk about, should this be kind of something that antitrust folks kind of take a look at? Should we say maybe Facebook's getting too big? And that kicked up a lot of that conversation. We saw some lawmakers yesterday going to social media. Once it was back up, certainly they were on Twitter during the outage saying, hey, this is why we have, you know, we say Facebook's too big. Look at all the impact that it's having.
Target's going to give people a bonus to work during the holidays, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Target's going to pay workers an extra $2 an hour for peak days of holiday season. They also said they're going to scale back holiday hiring. Not a thing we usually talk about this time of year, but they're going to scale back holiday hiring in order to give more hours to their existing workers. And, you know, to me, this is another piece of something I'm going to be watching so closely for the rest of the remainder of the year. And that is the holiday shopping season. We've already heard some alarms being sounded. Hey, it's going to be different this year. We still have a lot of supply chain issues. We still have a lot of issues surrounding how we get the goods that we buy. So please, you know, start early. Even Amazon started Black Friday deals yesterday, even though Black Friday's more than 50 days away. So this, you know, Target is, I think, already kind of bracing for, hey, this is going to be kind of different year, so we're going to bump up pay for folks. We're also going to let you have some bigger hours. They also created an app for workers that lets workers kind of pick up a flexible shift, kind of a same idea of when you needed a shift covered, you'd start calling coworkers, hey, can you cover me today? It's all done through an app. So they're, you know, taking these steps to support the workers that they have already.
And these peak days aren't Christmas Day or Christmas Eve or Thanksgiving. It's more like October to November, right?
Yeah, so the extra pay will go to workers and also service center workers who work Saturdays and Sundays from November 20th until December 19th, then on Christmas Eve or on the day after Christmas. So it's a pretty big swath of days.
One last thing then. Best Buy knows that you're going to have trouble getting some stuff. What are they doing?
Yeah, so they have launched a new membership program. It is called Total Tech. Now, Best Buy devoted shoppers will say, well, wait a minute, there's already a loyalty program and it has a very similar name. Indeed, it does. They acknowledge that they're going to be closing that down and acknowledging that it had far fewer perks. But what Totaltech is going to do, it's going to help customers access some hard to get items. They did not say exactly what that might be just yet, but they kind of hinted it might be some Apple products and some very in demand holiday gift items that would come from Best Buy. But they're going to, this costs $200 a year. So they get unlimited round the clock tech support, these special member prices on merchandise, and then 2 years of product protection on just about everything, free shipping and installation, and a bigger window for returns and exchanges. So they have a lot of features with this. $200 is a pretty big price tag for, you know, for a membership program, but you know, it's $100 for Amazon Prime. So I think some customers are kind of used to maybe paying a little bit more of a premium in order to get, you know, access or free shipping. But right. But this would be specifically, you get access to things that are going to be harder for other people to get. So I think that's kind of interesting. I'll be watching how that plays out for them.
The Best Buy new membership program. Amy Guth joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.